Welcome to the Portage County Safety Council podcast. We hope you enjoy today's featured message.
Thank you very much. All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Come on, a little more energy. I know we had these big sandwiches and these big cookies and we're all ready to go to sleep now. So let's try it again. Good afternoon. All right. A little more energy. That's what we're looking for. So the question becomes this. How does Nick, the safety consultant, end up standing in front of you talking about engagement of millennials? Yep, that's my goal. That's what I want to help you learn about. And how did Nick become an expert on this? Well, I don't know if I classify myself as an expert, but I've had a lot of research and study into this because of two reasons. The first being a few years ago, when we were giving one of those billion back to the community, the Division of Safety and Hygiene identified an issue. We identified that the millennial workforce was having twice the amount of injuries than any other generation. And that's scary to think about, especially if you're a safety person and you want to protect your workers, or if you're the person that's in that finance chair and you're looking at that bottom line and you're going to start doubling my injury rates, that means my premiums are going to start to creep up and it's going to cost me some money. So the question was posed, how do we engage the millennials in the safety process? And so I started a little research project on this and developed a presentation for Ohio Safety Congress, which over time has spun to several Ohio Safety Congress talks, speaking in front of multiple state of Ohio agencies from Job and Family Services, Department of Health, internally to our own leadership team. Also, I'm currently pursuing my master's in public administration. So the engagement of millennials from a workplace standpoint became a research paper for me. And so I spent a lot of time studying on that subject and looking at not only how do we engage them in that safety process that we're going to talk about today, but we're going to talk a little bit about how do we engage those millennials just in corporate culture, retain and maintain those workers in the workforce. And so that's how I ended up here today speaking to you about what you can do in your culture, what you can do in your organization to help engage and maintain. Now, it's important to note two things here. One, this is about the engagement of the millennials. We're not going to look at the other generations. However, they do play a role in this. And the second part is when we engage the millennials, we also have to educate them to look at how they change their approach too. I'm not asking the baby boomers and the Gen Xers to throw out everything they know and just change to how us millennials, including myself, think, act, and operate in the workplace. I'm saying we need to find a happy medium there somehow. However, to get there, I think we need some foundations to make that happen today. You may be wondering, too, before we go too far, why Nick's wearing a microphone. It doesn't amplify in here. We're actually recording this as part of a podcast, and we're going to talk about that podcasting and the use of that in your safety program here in a little bit. So if you're interested in this presentation or you want somebody else to listen to it, you'll be able to grab that from the Portage County Safety Council's webpage. We'll have that up probably in the next few weeks. So what are we looking at covering today? We're going to talk about who are millennials. And I think this is important because if we don't understand who millennials are, you're not going to be able to engage with them. And you're not going to understand the processes of what they're thinking, why they think that way. We'll talk a little bit about Gen Xers and baby boomers, but then we're going to jump right into the engagement piece. How do we engage millennials in the workplace to ensure they're not only buying into safety, but they're actively involved in the safety program? And that's the key. We can sell anything to anybody. We can get you excited about it, but how do we continue that going forward? How do we continue them being engaged beyond just that training center piece? Then we're going to talk about social media and technology. Let's face it, it's all around us. Raise your hand. How many of you have cell phones, smartphones? Take a look around the room. Keep your hands up. Very few hands not up, right? It's part of our lives. It's everywhere. How do we do our presentations anymore? It's right here on these projectors. It's all part of technology. Social media has become a big part of everyone's lives in one fashion or another. So how do we harness that power and make it work for us, especially with millennial generation? We'll take a look at that. And then we'll talk about keys to just overall generational success. We'll tap into that just a little bit. I do a much longer presentation on this, but how do we take the millennials and the other generations and start moving them together into one simplified approach? You know, it's important to remember that we've gone through this transition many times in the United States. Millennials are not unique to Gen Xers. We went through this with the Gen Xers many years ago. Same thing with baby boomers, and we're going to take a look at that here. So here's what I want you to do. If you're born between 1945 and 1965, I want you to stand up for me. I'm up for these chairs. Come on, be proud. Stand up. 1945 to 1965. I want you to take a look around at these individuals. And these are our baby boomers. Our baby boomers account for 44.6 million workers in the workforce today. This is what's represented here. All right, go ahead and have a seat. If you were born between 1965 and 1980, I want you to stand up. All right. These are our Gen Xers in the room. Gen Xers right now, you account for 52.7 million workers. What's interesting about your generation right now is that you flatline. We're not adding any more of you to the workforce. You are at that. That is the max amount you have. You're at 52.7 million workers in the workforce. You're not going up. You're not going down. You're staying stable right now. All right, go ahead and have a seat. If you were born between 1980 and 2000, stand up. Don't be ashamed. Stand up. Be proud about this because you're a millennial. I'm up here with you. Well, it depends on the research, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. Unfortunately, you still fall into that millennial. Those standing up account for millennials, and you account for 53.5 million workers. So you account for already a larger portion of the workforce than other generations, and your number continues to grow. So we're seeing more of you come into the workforce. Now, what's interesting is, as we stated up here, is what is a millennial? For my research and the papers I've done, we've labeled that 1980 to 2000. There are some other researchers recently in the past year to year and a half who are saying it's 85 to 95. There is a difference out there, but the majority of research papers you find will say 1980 to 2000 is that designated millennials. Now, after 2000 is the newest generation coming in. They're starting to enter the workforce today. They're working in, you know, those first starter jobs. And that's our Linksters. Anybody born after 2000 is considered a Linkster. All right. So where did the term Linkster come from? They grew up in an era of links. Think about your web links, your hosting links, those sorts of things. So they've called them the Linksters. So who are millennials? Well, we've talked a little bit about this, but it's a demographic that is basically born between 1980 and 2000. Those are your millennials in the workforce today. They represent currently about one third of the U.S. population. So one third of the U.S. population is millennials. Now, it depends on who you talk to and what research has been done. We're predicting by about 2025, between 2020 and 2025, they're going to be over 50% of the workforce. So they're going to be the largest portion of your workforce that you're going to have to work with, which means we may have to adjust a little to engage them in that workplace. And that's why I want to talk about the statistics a little bit, is for you to understand the importance of how big of the pie they're going to take up in your workplace in order for you to understand how we're going to have to adjust and work going forward. Now, with that said, just because you were born between those years does not mean you're going to have 100% of those traits. All right. And the best way to describe it is this. If you were a millennial and you were born in 1980, all right, you're born over here in 1980, you're not going to have all millennial traits. You're actually going to have some Gen X traits too. I was born in 1983. I grew up in a household with a brother that was 10 years older than me. All right. So he's born in 73. So I grew up around a lot of those Gen X traits. And so I carry those over to the workplace. We find that you're going to be the closest to that pure millennial mindset if you're born on that 1990 year mark. All right. It's kind of right in the middle. And there's other factors that drive this. It could be social and economic conditions where you grew up. It could be just the location you grew up in. So there's no 100% we can stamp you a millennial and say, this is exactly how you are. However, we can say that there are very similar traits within that year frames. Okay? And that's what we're looking at here. We're generalizing those down. And you're going to have to assess your own workplace to see what those traits look like and how you react to those and how you interact with those in the workplace. So Millennial 101, just a little bit for you to think about. One in three adults in America by 2020 will be millennials. And we know that 45% of the workforce in 2020, there's actually an article in the Wall Street Journal where Senator Mark Warner called out that it was going to be 75%. I think that's a little high percentage of your workforce because we are seeing the baby boomers and the Gen Xers hanging out in that workplace a little bit longer. They're not leaving as early as they used to. This is interesting for you to think about when you think about how do I engage them? What do I do to encourage them to be involved in the workplace? 87.5% disagree that money is the best measure of success. Now, if you think about your Gen Xers, your baby boomers, and you ask them how were they successful they were, it's usually tied to a dollar amount. They look at how well did I do? Success was based in dollars. Not so much with millennials. We actually find that millennials will work for less money at a job that they love. In fact, the study showed that 64% would do that. One of my coworkers that I work with does some outreach work. And this individual takes people who have had some problems in life. It could be jail time. It could be they're struggling to recover from that military life, switch over to civilian life, and helps bring them back to work. And they employ this program where they bring these workers back to work maybe a day a week, then two, then three, then four, then five. They're making minimum wage. They're not making a lot of money, but they're getting them started and they're trying to reacclimate them. The problem he finds is that when he goes to send this individual back off to work out in the real world, finds them a job and is giving them $4 an hour more, they don't want to leave. They don't want to leave because they found an environment in which they're comfortable, they enjoy the workforce, they found somebody who cares about them, and they like the causes that they've been giving to. So it's not all about the dollar amount for millennials. We're not looking to make that $1 million. And I think one of the reasons for that is you'll find that baby boomers and Gen Xers are quicker to sign that check and say, hey, United Way, here's my financial donation, where you find the millennials have been a little more engaged in how can I get out and actually interact in the community. And that's going to be an important point later on when we talk about work-life flexibility. So to give you an idea about how millennials interact and some of the thought process they have, I have a little video I'm going to show you. It's about 4 minutes long. It's really good. And then we're going to talk about how this plays into the workplace and why they identify with what they do compared to what they do. So let's take a look here. All right. So why did Nick show this video? For a little comic relief, but also to drive home a point about millennials. It's about putting them in the context that they can succeed and they're doing something more than just to produce that widget. They will expand and excel and work so much harder for you when they're in the right environment. And that environment being, yeah, I can make you widgets all day, like in the first Amazing Grace, right? I can do that. I'll go along with your safety program. But then when I find I'm working for that company that has a tie to me, and this is how we retain those workers, you know, I have a big outreach for kids. I run a project called Project Kids First in my hometown, where I'm redeveloping parks and putting in playground equipment. So when I work for an organization that's giving to that project or working in that field, they're outreaching to those kids, that's a big part for those millennials. And that's where they come in for that less money. And that's how you gauge them. That's that second Amazing Grace. That's that hood Amazing Grace, as he calls it, right? It's a whole different mentality and a whole different work set you get out of those individuals when they're working for what they believe in. It's not always about that dollar amount. And it's important for you to remember that, because when you go to say, hey, how do I encourage safety? Throwing dollar amounts at them saying, we're going to give you a safety bonus, we're going to give you $50 for doing this, isn't going to sell it anymore. It's going to have to be something different to engage those millennials. But maybe it's, hey, I'm going to give you a half day off so you can go work on that project, Nick, so you can get back to your community. That does two things for you. One, it engages those millennials in that process. You're changing that incentive program. But two, how does that make your company look now in that community? Now you're community oriented. You're giving back. You're engaging them. And that's what's going to retain those. And I'll tell you, a year ago when I gave this presentation, job markets were a little bit different. You know, there was people out there we could pick and choose from. Today, what I do in my job is I travel around to companies all over Northeast Ohio, specifically Portage and Summit counties. And I go in and I visit those employers. And one of the number one complaints I get, because I like to get to know my customers before we get to safety, is, hey, how's business going? And the response I get right now is, business is good, but I can't find workers. And the workers I have, I got to retain them somehow. So now it's no longer, ah, they're millennials, I don't want to deal with it. It's, ah, they're millennials and they're working good. How am I going to retain them? How am I going to keep them in here? And how am I going to keep them safe? And that is what you need to be looking at today. And that's what we're going to try to get across a little bit. When we talk about millennials and we talk about who they are, one of the things that we look at is a little millennial 101. Civic duty is a big piece for them. We found when there was a study done that millennials are more engaged in the community. They want to do more of those hands-on projects. That's a big piece of them. They also like to work in an environment that is fun. Think about your Googles, your Facebooks, even Gojo, all right? That's a local company. The environment in there is much different. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that everybody needs to come to work and have a party every day, okay? There's widgets that need to be made. But how do we make that environment fun? How do we make it engaging for them? Because if it's not fun there, they're going to go somewhere else where it's more fun. And it doesn't matter if you're working in a mill Or if you're working in a Fortune 500 company, there are things that you can do to encourage that engagement of your workers, especially in the safety world. If I got workers out there and I want to engage the safety process, I want to start to change that culture to be more safety-minded, you know, we can do things like, hey, let's do a scavenger hunt. Let's see how many safety problems you can find. And it becomes this little activity. We get them engaged in that process. And what you're doing is you're conditioning their mind to look for those problems too. And we're making that work environment a little more fun. Let's have a competition. Prior to working for the Bureau of Workers' Comp, I worked for Portage County government for several years, redeveloping a safety and health program for them. And one of the things that I did was I developed a safety challenge in one of our divisions. The division had basically, we'll call them four cells, and I needed to get them more involved in safety. So how did I do it? Well, every quarter we had a competition, and the competition was percentage of people that completed their training on time, they got points for that. Percentage of supervisors who turned in safety rewards, meaning they identified something their employees did. Percentage of safety concerns identified that the team turned in. And what this did was engage those teams. Now, granted, it was pulling teeth at first. They're like, what's Nick doing? This is some crazy idea. But at the end of the first quarter, the team that had the most points was given a trophy. And the trophy was a bunch of junk that I collected from around the office. All right, these were water sewer guys. So I took a toilet plunger and I stuck it on the table and I found some superhero they found in the bottom of a tank one day and glued it to it, put all these little pieces, parts on it. What that team did was they took that out to their job sites because they all worked together and they'd stick it on the hood of their truck and just kind of rub it in. All right, and I also gave them pizza for the day. We all had a big pizza lunch. But the idea was it got them going. Well, all of a sudden we had this competition. Now they're all fighting to get these points. And now I'm inundated with great things and a culture change. And it just made it a little more fun. And there was a little ragging going on there, you know, a little rubbing going on to encourage them. But we brought that fun to work and it started to change that safety program. Now, this is probably one of the hardest things, especially for my baby boomers to buy into, is the personal attention piece. I probably could look around the room and see some head drop when they think about their millennials and they come to you 100 times going, what do you think about this? Is this okay? I remember when I first started at the Bureau, my boss, we get along great. I work well with her. But I think I made her lose a little bit of hair the first 6 months I was here because that's what I grew up as. And it wasn't that I didn't know how to do my job. I wanted to make sure I was doing my job well. So I was often in her cubicle going, hey, Don, what do you think about this? Don, what do you think about that? And so, you know, there was just some concern there. But there's a reason that millennials engage that way. If you think about how millennials were raised, it is much different than it used to be. How many of you have heard the term helicopter parent, right? Baby boomers, you were kind of that helicopter parent that were hovering over your kids, right? Making sure they're okay, giving them constant feedback. Coach gave constant feedback. Culture changed a little bit in that period. Well, you're getting payback now. Your helicopter parenting for 18 years is transferring over to the workplace, and it takes a little bit of an adjustment, but over time, the millennials will back off and stop asking as many questions, but it's finding that comfort zone. So that's a piece that you're going to have to work through. But the reason for it is the culture in which they grew up. Many of those individuals grew up in that helicopter parenting situation. Be it a parent, be it a teacher, be it a coach, be it a counselor, whatever it is, there's usually some type of piece in there in many situations. The other piece is that millennials are part of a global community. You know, 30 years ago, you probably weren't talking to somebody in China, right? You probably weren't talking to somebody over in Europe. There is any time now I can go home, and I'll admit it, I'm not ashamed. I'm a gamer, I'm a geek, whatever you want to call me. I'll hop on and play a little Warcraft tonight. I may be playing with a friend over in Europe. All right? It's a global community now. It's no longer, I only know the person down the street or in my block. So there's this globalization, and they're part of that larger community. The other piece that happens is the instant gratification. And this is key to success with safety, is that you have to reward. And when I say reward, I'm not saying cash. I'm not saying giving them $1 million. I'm not saying buying pizza every time. Sometimes it's just, hey, you did a good job today. All right. Small gratification. All right. That instant gratification and reward system they're looking for, because that's what they grew up in. Think about, as millennials, we grew up in the video game era. We grew up in instant feedback era. So in this video game, I go do something and I get all these bells and whistles went off. You saved the princess in Mario, right? So there's this instant feedback that, hey, I did something right. We grew up in an environment right now, and this has actually caused a big change, especially with our Linksters, that instant gratification of Facebook. You post that post up, and then you get this beep that says somebody liked it. How do you feel? I feel pretty good. Somebody liked my post. Hey, I got 10 likes today on the post. I'm doing pretty good. So it's that gratification, instant gratification, that drives some of that behavior in the workplace. So how do we transfer that over? It's identifying those things that they're doing well within the organization, from production to quality to safety, and giving some of that gratification in some way, that positive reinforcer. So, and it's the opposite of what's happening. And that's why we're talking about there needs to be a culture change. There has to be some type of culture change. So how do you do that? Well, and some people feel that way. And you will have that. You're always going to have some outliers in that piece there. But at the same time, you have to remember, it's not that they just want to come in and put a few hours and they're done. They don't want to work hard. Their definition of hard work is different than yours. Baby boomers were the generation in which they lived to work. Work defined who they were. They lived to work. They enjoyed working hard. Gen Xers will probably attest to this. My brother loves this motto. I think it's written on his office wall. It says, work hard, play hard, right? That was that Gen Xer mentality. You're seeing with the millennials, it's more, I work to live, all right? I'm here to get what I need so that I can go do what I want to do. It's not that I don't want to work hard. It's just, I'm here to get what I need so that I can go out, give the civic duty, go out and do what I enjoy doing. It's just a very much different mindset within the workplace. And that's some of the pieces that we're seeing. And when you take a generation in which an individual was, I live to work and I go to work to live, you're on opposite ends of the spectrum. But there is a way to bring you together, and we're going to talk about that here in a second. Yeah. But you got to remember a couple things there. Civic duty, we're talking about giving back to the civic. Second of all, it's about creating the opportunity in which allows them to vote. Here's what happens, and follow me on this for a second, because I do a lot of study in the political science realm of things too. And I'm trying to remember what state it was in. I can't remember off the top of my head. Out west, we'll say Wisconsin, Colorado, something like that. What they did was they changed how you registered to vote, okay? Because we find when millennials go to vote, they just never registered and they want to go vote, all right? Today's the day to vote. I'm going to go vote. And you can't because you never registered for that piece. They changed voter registration in this one state to say when you get your driver's license, you're automatically registered to vote unless you check a little box and opt out of it. They saw the growth of millennial voters out there was significant, all right? So that's one of the issues. There's an issue of making sure that they do what they need to do here to activate here. They're kind of a last minute person. All right. So that's part of that. There's a whole other list of things, and I'm not going to go down the whole political run today because I want to focus on the safety end. But that's a discussion we can kind of have offline with that civic duty piece. What was that again? So if the millennials do what? Challenge their intelligence? Right. So it sounds like you're asking how do they engage or how do they gain that intelligence from other individuals? And that comes into the mentoring piece, which we're going to catch up to here in a few slides. But that's one of the big pieces that millennials are looking for. And that's where we take that baby boomer generation, that millennial generation start to meld them together. They're looking to absorb and gather some of that information from the baby boomers and the Gen Xers. You know, they want that mentor, not that boss. And we're going to talk about what that means. So one of the interesting things that we have here is Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And this really starts to more signify before we start getting into the engagement piece of how millennials interact in the workplace and how things are different. Now, you gotta remember, this isn't across the board. I can't just say because you're a millennial, you're gonna fit this model and this is how it's gonna work. But generationally speaking, with an overarching theme, we know this, that when millennials enter the workforce, things have changed. Things are a little different here. And we're finding that their psychological needs are met, all right, before they enter the workforce. We're finding that their safety and security needs have been met before they enter the workforce. Love and belonging has been met. And this is the difference here. It used to be we went to work to define ourselves. The older generations were looking for, this is who I am. Well, if I was to ask my dad, who are you? He'd say, I'm a carpenter. If I asked my mom, who are you? I'm a nurse. That work defined exactly who they were. And that's where they found love and belonging. And that was their sector of people. My mom associates all of her friends, even to today, when she meets new friends at her volunteer activities. Somehow they all end up being nurses. I don't know how it happens, but they're all nurses, right? Where we found that love and belonging at an earlier age, culture was different, schools were different. There was more of this encompassing of them for the most part. So now when they're entering the workforce, they're looking for self-esteem or esteem and self-actualization, which is much different. They're looking to build themselves up. They're looking for that advancement opportunity, that growth opportunity to make themselves feel better. Not so much here. So they kind of come in at a different point than you would expect a new hire to be. And that changes things. So the big question becomes, how do we engage millennials? How do we get them involved and get them to where we need to be? How do we get them to work more? How do we get them to be safer in the workplace? And we're going to talk about that here. This was another interesting study that was out there about engagement of millennials. And this really drives home the point of why generations struggle together even more. If you take a 12-year-old and ask them how old they wish they could be, they typically end up in this 19 to 22-year-old range. If you ask a 29-year-old how old they wish they were, they're going to tell you they wish they were in this 19 to 22-year-old range. We wish we could go back to those days. If we only knew then what we know now, life would be much different. So this is kind of like the dream age to be in. And so when that generation comes in, there's psychologically some rub there. There's some frustration between those generations because they are the person that you wish you could be. They're doing those things that you wish you could do, but you know that you're that full-time adult now and you have some other obligations to deal with. So this was a really interesting study, and they've done this for many, many years. And every year they do it, these numbers are almost exactly the same. All right. There's this drive to be there. The other thing that we find in generational differences is that what we call the Big Five has changed. They used to say you were successful if you completed the Big Five in life. That's completing school, leaving home, meaning you're not living in your parents' basements anymore, millennials, becoming financially independent, marrying and having a child. Those were the Big Five goals to happen. In 1960, by age 30, 77% of women and 65% of men had accomplished that. Pretty high numbers by age 30. However, if we look at 2010, by age 30, only 13% of women had accomplished that and 10% of men. Big difference there. What it is, it's not that they don't want to accomplish these things. They've just found a way to do that a little bit later in life and to extend those, call them honeymoon years, out of life. So they have this much different mindset. By age 30, you expect your workers to be interacting a certain way, but they still haven't hit what your generation would have called that. It's still this, but it's happening later in life. It's not going to happen here. We're going to go travel. We're going to do this. We're going to do that before we have the kids. Or I'm going to live in parents' basement because I'm going to do a startup company. You're seeing, you know, not so much in the manufacturing end, but this class covers all workforces. You're seeing more and more startups happening in that millennial generation, more entrepreneurship. In fact, one of the biggest things that I see happening right now, a new phenomenon called fractional work. I mean, there's a lot of people jumping into this fractional work. So you own a company, you go, I really need a safety guy, but I can't pay you $90,000 a year. So I come to you and I go, listen, I'll be your fractional safety guy. I'll come in 8 hours a week, but you're going to pay me $80 an hour for that. Still saves you from paying that $90,000 bill, right? But you're getting a set person 8 hours a week. And then I'm going to come over to you and say, hey, I'll work on Wednesdays for 8 hours a week at $80 an hour. And then I can do what I want with my time and I can move it around. Fractional work. There's a lot of fractional HR, fractional legal. I'm seeing more and more of this pop up in industries. And you're seeing that coming out of that millennial generation. So let's talk a little bit about what is your onboarding look like? How are you? Because this is where you're setting the pace, right? You're hiring a new person. You want them engaged in safety. You want them engaged in production, whatever it is. And you have this onboarding process. Many people fall into these two pictures here. The first being what I call the sink or swim method. I see some smiles out there. And I'll use myself as a story. I remember I was really excited. I had worked for a large healthcare organization for many, many years. And they got me through college, paid for my degree, but I had this amazing opportunity to go to the county. And I was going to be their safety guy. Now, they never had a safety person before. So remember my first day, I bought a brand new suit. I was all dressed up nice. I walked in, I met my boss, and she's like, welcome to the team. Here's your cell phone. Here's your number. She goes, your office is two doors down. That's where you'll be set up. Go do safety. Down my office, lunchtime comes, nobody's been by. About 3 p.m., somebody pops in and goes, how's safety going? And that was it. I was thrown in, sink or swim, go do it. Well, what happens with that? Nothing. We're setting them up for failure, right? We take them, we throw them on the floor and go, be safe. Well, maybe I haven't worked in manufacturing. Maybe I didn't grow up in that environment. Maybe I've never worked around that type of machinery before. You're throwing them out and you're setting them up for failure. So this is one onboarding practice I often see. The other is what I call the dump truck method. Love the Bureau of Workers' Comp, but this is kind of what happened here. So I remember my first day here, I was really excited to start at the Bureau of Workers' Comp. Once again, Nick got himself a nice new suit, showed up to work, and they go, welcome to the Bureau, here's your manual, go to your pod and read this. Page after page after page. Day two, they go to Columbus, and you're going to go through training on everything you need to know. So I drive in a snowstorm down to Columbus, sit through this training, come home, and 6 weeks later, when I need to remember something, it's all gone because it was just dumped on me in one lump sum, and that was it. In fact, one of the things that we find that is a major problem with this dump truck method of safety training is that millennials' brains have been trained a little bit differently than other generations, and we continue this through Linksters. It's this thought. We've said, student, here's what you need to know for the test for the next 2 weeks. Once you pass that test, here's what you need to know for the test for the next 2 weeks. Here's what you need to know. When you do that for 18 years, this is the only thing you need to know, and you dump information, that's how the mind starts to work unless we start to slowly reprogram it. So when you, sir, say, hey, Nick, welcome to the company. I'm going to teach you how to run widget A. I go over to the machine, I punch some buttons, and these products come out, punch them, they come out. Things are working well. Then you tell me to run widget B. So you show me how to do that. So for 6 weeks, I would run widget B. Things are good. So when you come to me and tell me to run widget A, what do you expect? I'm going to walk right up to the machine and start punching buttons, right? I walk up to it and I go, well, I don't remember how to do that. All right, I've dumped that information. So point of operation training becomes really, really important instead of just dumping that information over there. So successful work environments, collaborative. We find that when you are developing a safety program, you're engaging them in safety, collaboration is a strong piece for you. So finding a way to engage them in the process. Safety committees, safety teams are really powerful, especially if you utilize them in the right way. They can just become complaint testers and pizza eater parties really quick. But if you use those for collaboration, they become pretty strong. Also, don't stop the creativity. Sometimes millennials will come up with some really creative, crazy ideas, and you're like, that'll never work here. But why don't we talk through? Why doesn't it work? What could we take out of that? You know, they're just trying to think outside of the circle a little bit and trying to come up with a creative way to solve some of those processes. Flexibility is another big one. This is especially hard in manufacturing, not so much in other industries. We find that millennials will take different jobs just for that flexibility office. You know, they like that flex work scheduling. Hey, core hours are, you know, noon to four. And, you know, you can either work late or come in early and you can flex that around your needs so that you can do your civic duty, your community involvement, or deal with kids. You know, the generation of dad works or mom works and the other one stays home is long gone. My wife and I both work full time. My wife works 40 hours a week. I put in about 70 hours a week between my two jobs. So flexibility is key. Because I have a 2 and 4 year old. How am I going to get them to school? How am I going to get them home? How am I going to get them to events? That becomes a question. So how do we start to build that into that? How do we do that? A little bit easier in an office environment, a little bit easier in a sales environment, construction environment, potentially manufacturing. We have a set schedule. It's a little more difficult, but we can become creative in that way to retain those people. Successful work communications, you know, email, voicemail, those become really big tools that they utilize because that's the environment they grew up in. But once again, manufacturing doesn't always work that way. It depends on your environment that you're working with. These are some big things that you can do as a mentor. So this, I want to make sure I drive home this point for you before we get into some of the thinking outside the box pieces. If you're a mentor, if you are that baby boomer that's in the room, how many of you are excited about retirement that's on the horizon? I saw a lot of hands pop up, right? Yeah, us millennials, we're excited about it too. But this is more key to my baby boomers right now, all right? We're really excited about that. Hands were flying up. You guys were more excited about that than the hello, Nick, entry that we had, right? There was some energy there. You're quickly leaving, all right? You're looking for that way out. You're looking for that retirement opportunity. If it strikes, you're taking it. But we have this young workforce that's looking for that knowledge, but they don't want you to be the boss. They don't want you to say, this is how I'm going to do it. They want you to say, here's how we're going to do it. Let's mentor. Let's work together because that's the environment they grew up in. Once again, we got to think about what was their environment like. They didn't grow up with a lot of the coaching that said, this is how you will do it. It was more, hey, let's huddle together. Let's talk. Let's interact. Let's be a team approach. They really are engaged in being part of that process too in communicating. I think one of the things that really made my boss nervous when we first met, I think it was within the first 3 months that I was there, she was walking down the hallway and she stops and she looks and there's Nick sitting in the service ops manager's office, all right? So for those of you that don't work in workers' comp, that's kind of like the person that's in charge of the whole building. Why is Nick sitting in there? Well, because I walked by the service ops manager in the hallway and I had an idea and we started talking. We went to his office, started talking. Well, instead of going through the channels of talking to this person who talked to that person who talked to that person, you know, we grew up in, you're involved in that conversation. Children were allowed to talk at the table, not the old children are seen, not heard mentality that carries over to the workplace. So how do we deal with this? How do we think outside the box? There was a Harvard Business School put this statement out, and they said basically this. Training multi-generational workforce is art in itself. Young workers want to make quick impact. The middle generation needs to believe in the mission, and older employees don't like ambivalence. Your move. So how are you going to interact with this? We have these very differing thought processes out there. So we have to start to think outside the box. What can I do to engage them in safety? How do I tie all this generational difference that we just talked about in the past 50 minutes to safety? How do I make my workers safety? So we start to look at what can we utilize that's available to us that are easy fixes. How many of you do some sort of toolbox talk? Raise hands, all right? How many of you believe your employees are tired of hearing you give that same toolbox talk? So how do I change it up? How many of you are tired of giving that toolbox talk? I saw hands going really high, right? So how do I change this up? What do I do that would be different? How do I think outside that box on that manufacturing floor that's a quick impact that's going to start to change safety? All right, so you have them do it. All right, so you have them pick up the talk and they read it out. That's a great way. That's, you know, changing it up a little bit. I have some people attach them to paychecks, and then there's going to be a name draw on Monday. Who pulls the short straw to give the talk, right? So everybody's got to go home and read it, right? It's another way. But have you ever thought about thinking outside the box and doing something like podcasts? Take a listen to this.
Welcome to the Portage County Safety Council Podcast. We hope you enjoy today's safety talk.
Hi, this is Joe Barney with the Great Lakes Construction Company. And here are four warning signs you may be exposed to possible heat illnesses. Profuse sweating, muscle cramps, muscle fatigue, dizziness, and nausea. Some methods to prevent these signs from happening include removing the worker from the exposure of elements, removing the worker from the sun, putting them into the shade, drinking plenty of fluids, having at least 8 ounces of water within an hour period, and frequently drinking fluids. Making sure that you have the ability to cool the body temperature. Any type of ice towels or adding any type of mist will help bring the person's body temperature down to normal. Some work practices that an employer can do to put into place heat illness prevention programs is to make sure you have an emergency action plan. Having an emergency action plan will allow workers and other members of the job site to know what to do in the event of an emergency. Make sure you have a necessary program to acclimatize workers to gradually build up their exposure to heat. Workers must have adequate potable water for drinking. At least 8 ounces of water within a 20-minute period is recommended. At least 1 hour, having at least 2 bottles or 16 ounces of water would be adequate to keep a worker well protected. If possible, make sure the physical demands should be reduced during hot weather or heavy work activity. Reducing the worker's exposure to the elements is your best bet. Rotating job functions amongst workers can help minimize overexertion and heat exposure, and of course, utilizing the buddy system. Watching out for fellow workers to make sure that everybody is doing what they can to prevent heat illnesses.
All right. So how about doing a podcast like that? Did you know you can find stuff like that online for free? All you need is a cell phone. How many of you raise your hand that you have a cell phone? Raise them back up. Let's see. So if you have a cell phone, you already have the tool you need. Those are free. This one that you just listened to is from Portage County Safety Council. There's plenty of other podcast people out there. There's no cost to them. You go out on your floor, you click that play button, you have somebody else giving that information. They're hearing it from somebody else, some safety professional that exists out there in that cyber world. It's a way to change it up. Start using that technology. If you work in an office setting, you can easily send this out as a link and say, everybody has to listen to this. Here's an update. Here's something you might want to know about. So that's just one way to start to use that technology and start to engage them in a different manner. You know, social media is a big piece. And I know we don't want people using their phones at work, but we know one thing for sure. They're going to do it at their lunch breaks and they're going to do it at home. So maybe you create that private Facebook page, that private LinkedIn page, or that private Twitter account just for your company. And then your employees join that and you can be feeding this information out. If they want to look at it or not, it's going to come across their feed. It's going to get them thinking about safety or engagement or quality in the workplace. So then you throw something out like this. How many of you find that your training has become a little lackluster and people are a little bored with it? Raise your hands. All right, I get it. I'm always looking for ways that we can change this up, right? So one of the biggest things that we find in adult learning theory is that we need to engage them in some process. So here's what I want you to do. All of you that have cell phones, I want you to pull them out right now. All right, if you have a smartphone, I want you to pull it out. All right, and I want you to go to Kahoot.it in your web browser, and you're going to put this number in. All right, we're going to have a little fun before we get out of here. All right, I'll know when you're in because you'll start telling me we have players. So go to Kahoot.it. All right, we got one person in. Kahoot.it. Now this website I'm showing you is completely free. There's no cost to it. Anybody can use this. You can go to the App Store, or you can just go to the website. You can just go to the website if you don't want to download an app. Look at that, we're up 26 people. Numbers are growing. I started introducing this into my training, and it's really changed things. I have a lot of positive feedback on how I can start to use this technology. All right, we're getting some more of you in there. All right, we're going to go ahead and start just because we're almost out of time. So let's take a look at how this works. The engagement class. Four questions. Are you ready? Here we go. PPE is an abbreviation for what? You're going to have to choose the right answer that comes up here. The answers are on the screen. All right, 36% of you got my easy question right. Personal protective equipment. All right. However, who is P? Raise your hand. Right back here, give this man a round of applause. He's number one so far. Let's see who can keep up with them. Ready? Next question. Ladder inspections are required how often? Daily, weekly, annually, or prior to use? All right. Prior to use, you should be inspecting your ladders. See, P's still in the lead. Some trivia now. What is the highest grossing movie of all time? Is it Avatar, Star Wars 7, Avengers, or Titanic? Avatar is the highest grossing video of all time. So P is still in the lead, but Skippy is on fire catching up. Where's Skippy at? All right, here we go. Here's your last one. Highest grossing album of all time. Pink Floyd, AC/DC, Michael Jackson, or the Eagles? It is Michael Jackson's Thriller. And so we have here our results. P has taken first place. Let's give him a round of applause. All right, so here's what we're gonna do. We got a couple more minutes. I wanna finish up these slides here. All right. So that's just one way you can start to engage safety in your training. It doesn't matter if it's quality training, production training, safety training, something like that from Kahoots or Quizlet is another one. Both of those are free. You can get on their websites and tie that into your training. You're engaging that millennial, and believe it or not, we had everybody in here participating. It didn't matter what generation you were, and you were having fun. All right, we saw a lot of smiles in here. We heard some laughter in here. So this is a way just to get them a little more engaged in that process. The other thing is online training. Technology is changing, and there's so many different platforms that are out there now that you can get point of operation training that's digital. Tablets don't cost that much money anymore. You can get them for $100, you put them on the production line, and before you go to run production line widget A, they click on it and it says widget A, here's machine setup, here's quality inspection guidelines, and here's safety pieces that you should be aware of. And it shows you right there, it takes 2 to 3 minutes. 2 to 3 minutes is worth your time compared to that injury or rework of a bunch of product, right? So you just have this point of operation training right there. A lot of this stuff has become, price points have come down, they become more cost effective. The technology is out there. And there's a company that I work with that has done this, and they said their quality has increased, their production times have gotten shorter, so they're getting more product out, and their lost time and their injuries have drastically decreased. All from a small investment. You know, it's outside the box. It's not something we normally think about doing, but these are ways that we can start to engage them. Now, I do like to answer this question, what about the phones? All right, I get this from everybody. Nick, they're on these phones all the time, right? Millennials. I'm even seeing it in my baby boomers and my Gen Xers now, all right? There's some addiction. I'm listening to a book, audiobook right now that talks about the addiction that's going on and how addicts work with alcohol and drugs. But we also find that same addiction principles are applying to this device right here, all right? It's that excitement I told you about when you get that, hey, I got 10 likes today on my post. I'm really excited about it. We see the same thing. So how do we start to break that? Well, part of that is the conditions of your culture and your environment. What do your daily work assignments look like? Are you setting short-term tangible goals for them to achieve so it keeps them on task? How do we improve management of this? It's conversations about why you can't do this at the line. However, we're going to provide you spaces. We're going to give you free Wi-Fi in the lunchroom. We're going to give you charging ports in the lunchroom. We're going to give you that in the break room. We create an environment for them to go and utilize this. And then we tie into creating our own social media page for them to be involved in. This is a win-win for everybody. So they know they have a place to go. They know they have a place for engagement outside of the production line. We're just setting parameters with inside of that. There's some cultural and managerial issues there, though, too. What's the ramifications of the behavior? You got to remember, discipline is about behavior correction and modification, not just punishment. So how do we start to do that? What are the steps that you're taking to change that behavior? What's the consequences of that behavior? And that becomes the question that you have to ask. All right, so final thoughts on this. Positive reinforcement, it truly can move mountains. I worked for a company one time and we were doing some reinforcement pieces. And I remember my guys, my workers were out all night long on callouts. It was storming. They left their families at home in tornadoes, but they pushed through it and they got the work done because we had a lot of issues happening. Next morning, I looked at a group of managers and I said, listen, this is our chance because we're doing culture change. This is your chance to make a big impact. All you have to do is go out there and tell them thank you. Tell them thank you for coming in all night and leaving their families at home. And one manager looked at me and goes, Nick, their thanks is their paycheck, and walked out the door. Well, you can imagine which department was struggling the most, right? It was that department there. Okay, so positive reinforcement can move mountains, and that's a true point. Mentoring and coaching is a big piece. Those baby boomers, work with them. Find out, what are your aspirations? What do you want to do? What's your goal? Do you want to become a manager here? Do you want to be the foreman? Do you want to be the plant ops manager at some point? If that's the case, let's start working together. You got to learn these processes here before you can get there. But I'm going to grow you, and I'm going to get you to that point. They're looking for that. That's one way you can do that. Quick reference, handouts, point of operations training is big, and post-training reviews is even bigger. Remember, millennials take that information, they dump it, and they pick something up new. So there's going to have to be some repetitiveness to this, but it's going to save you time, money, and energy in the long run. All right, I am out of time because it's 1:15. They're going to pull me off stage. Thank you. If you have any questions, I'll be around. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. For more episodes, check us out on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Podbean, or Stitcher. To get new episodes sent directly to your phone or smart device, be sure to subscribe. To learn more about how your company can earn up to a 4% Ohio BWC premium rebate by becoming an active member of the Portage County Safety Council, please visit our website at www.portagecountysafetycouncil.wordpress.com. The preceding information is for entertainment purposes only. Views expressed may not reflect the views of any affiliated or sponsoring individuals or organizations. Listeners should carefully weigh information provided and seek advice from an appropriate professional before implementing. Listener discretion is advised.